Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hello and welcome back to episode number 56 of The Gospel of Ham. I am Matt Minnick and I'm joined by Michael Rogner here. It is January 15th when we're recording Martin Luther King Day. Thank you to all of the great the advancements in this country that movement has created, and Leonard Hamilton is probably one of the people that could speak best on that in terms of when he started coaching and playing. And he was at Kentucky. It was essentially, remember him, he told a story once that he was told, like, you're never going to be a head coach at Kentucky because of the color of your skin. And now he's, you know, been a multi-time conference champion, conference coach of the year in both the Big East and the ACC. And so he has certainly been an embodiment of what was possible for the progress in this country. Michael, it's been a long time since we've talked. I think November 22nd is what I have the last time. Month and a half, maybe, almost pushing a little further. How are you doing?
I'm good. I remember the last time we talked, we were pretty excited. I think that was sometime after the Colorado win, and then things kind of went south for FSU basketball, and the whole football thing happened, and then the holidays. And so, yeah, I guess I'm not surprised to hear that it's been 2 months, but it's been too long, and we got some good stuff to talk about. So
We do.
let's do it.
I'll be honest and say I think some of the people who listen to this probably know that I contribute from time to time on the football side of things too. And you might not contribute publicly, but you certainly bring a lot of welcome snark to the Slack channel. And so I've probably shared on the boards before that my dad this season was very special to me from a football standpoint. Dad had been the one that I'm a Florida State fan because of my dad. There's FSU jerseys behind me because of my dad, and he passed in August. And it felt like this ode this whole time, all these memories. And I'll be honest, I took that snub pretty hard. Said a lot of words that would make this a probably more than an explicit episode here. And so I don't think I really felt like talking anything Florida State, to be honest. And wife and I decided not to go. We went to the AC Championship game, didn't go down to Orange Bowl. And frankly, the basketball team, it almost felt like was as depressed as, like, I don't know what happened, but if you just look at the, let me take one step back. When we left off, Florida State was about 75th or so in KenPom and rising. We, like you said, came out of the Colorado win, had a good win, exceeding expectations. And you look at us right now, and we're sort of in the low to mid 80s. I think it's 87th today, but it fluctuates day to day depending on when your opponents win and lose and stuff like that. You're like, oh, okay, so hasn't really changed. But if you that doesn't tell the whole story, Michael, right? Because we witnessed what happened in December. And if you go to another website, this one's free, barttorvik.com, and you just isolate the results of all the teams in college basketball for the month of December, I'm going to hit you with something, man. We were 179th just from December 1st to December 31st. We were 2-4 during that time. We were 179th. We had the 234th best, in quotes, offense, and we were 315th in effective field goal percentage. Essentially, we were horrid. And then the last four game, really a little more than that, but if you just isolate the first half of this month of January, just from January 1st to today, we are 37th with a top 60 defense and a top 75 offense, and that effective field goal percentage, still not great, but it's 161st instead of, what did I say before, 315th. What the hell happened, man? What happened? We were horrid, and now we're basically like an NCAA tournament, playing like
Yeah,
an NCAA tournament team, right?
a few years ago, my wife and I, we hit an elk in our truck and like totally blew up the front end of the truck. And then we got it fixed, and everybody looked at it and like, hey, your truck looks really nice. But they hadn't seen it like a month ago when it was a total piece of shit. And that's exactly what's kind of happened with Florida State basketball is when we lost to South Florida at home. It was one of those
In
moments where
Miami, in
I
Miami.
mean, sorry, in Miami. It
Yeah.
was one of those moments where I thought that the program had kind of like reached a new low, but then it just keeps surprising me with new lows when we lost at home to Lipscomb, and it was totally clear about 15 minutes into the game that the players didn't give a shit and they'd quit. And then they basically didn't even play for the first 30 minutes. Then they tried to make a big comeback at the end and it fell short. And it was just, I pretty much gave up on FSU basketball. And then, so sitting here with the first actual winning streak, that's more than two games and more than 2 years, we have a four game winning streak. It's not at all what I expected. But I'm thrilled with it. The schedule gets a little harder now, but we'll see where this thing goes. People are actually asking in the comment section, like, could this team make the tournament? Which, a month ago was just a joke of a question, but now maybe there is a little legitimate sliver of hope, for something like that to happen. So, yeah, happy that things have turned around. We'll see how long it lasts.
Yeah, we'll address that question maybe in a little bit. Let's come back to can we make the tournament? Because unfortunately, as Florida State fans know very well, even and football fans, if you're just turning into this, tuning in to say, well, hey, let me check out basketball season. Here's this podcast. I'll check out these goobers and see what they're talking about. It's more than just like, yes, the committee has to pick you, which, as you know, is not a sure thing. But you also there's also like some scheduling kind of matrix and manipulations and stuff. We'll get into that. But so the effort is clearly, if someone were to just be tuning in right now and they're like, well, all right, you're telling me that the so we were literally like a not a barely a top 200 basketball team for an entire month, and now we're solidly a top 50, like a top 40 team for this month so far. I think the effort has to be mentioned. I mean, we've literally heard players in press conferences after games make statements, you know, like, well, you got to realize that you can't take nights off, or you gotta do when the coach puts in the game plan, you gotta execute the way they're talking about it, or you just gotta do what we're being asked to do and stuff like that. So I think those are all statements of a team that knows they weren't trying. But there's got to be other stuff, right? Like some things have happened between late November and now, like actual basketball things.
Absolutely. There's a few things that I think are worth mentioning. One, Primo Spears, you know, he they overruled the NCAA's ability to block transfers, and so he's became eligible.
He benefited from the same thing that Darrell Jack, like he was
Yeah.
ineligible, just like Darrell Jackson was, and now he's eligible because the NCAA has egg all over their face and everybody's eligible.
Yep. And then Jalen Gainey came back. He came back a little bit earlier, but now he's actually getting into game shape, and so we're able to see a little bit of what he has to offer. Bol Bowen is sort of becoming a valuable piece off the bench. He's providing a little more consistency. And then Ham has actually switched up a little bit, made a minor wrinkle to the defense, which I think is a big help, which is he stopped switching automatically when the ball is like 30 feet from the hoop. You know, we're actually seeing our bigs kind of drop back behind that screen and allowing guard to stay on guard, or you know, forward to stay on forward or whatever. And that has made it a little bit tougher for teams to just switch on to whatever, you know, ideal matchup they want. And so the combination of all those things, I think, has FSU playing better. And then we're just leaning also on, you know, Watkins and Deontay Green and you know, the experienced guys. They're providing a little bit more of a consistent, good, solid game.
Yeah, I think though I that a lot resonates. If it's funny you mentioned Watkins because I had just pulled him up. So he was the KenPom game MVP for both UNLV and Colorado, which was the last time basically we potted. And at this so at that point Florida State was 1-2-3-4-1. They had a blowout loss at UF where it was sort of like it unraveled pretty quickly and both teams kind of just try to get out of there without injury. But he had three MVPs out of those four games, and then he really, okay, he had a good game at UNC, but and actually, frankly, the team had a good game at UNC. If we could just, that did take place in December, but the team just had a good game up there. He really went into a kind of a funk, to be honest. After that, his He was 1-for-7 in the UGA game, 2-for-6 against SMU. This is from twos, not even from three. He was 0-for-1, 0-for-1, 1-for-3, one, you know, kind of not great from threes. He wasn't getting to the free throw line very much, with the exception of the Lipscomb game where he was 12-for-13. And his assist totals were 1-2, 3-2, 2, and it looks like another one, albeit I'll make the caveat that's a little hard to get assists when none of your teammates can put the ball in the basket. Last few games, Jameer Watkins, he was 11-for-11 from the stripe against Wake Forest, 4-for-6 against Notre Dame, so he's getting the line more. He made a couple threes against Georgia Tech. He actually didn't make any the last couple games, but a little bit better from two, and 9 assists against Wake Forest, 4 assists against Virginia Tech, 6 defensive rebounds. Like he's back to maybe, I don't know if maybe he was sick, maybe he had like, who knows, maybe he just had a slump. but he's been the game MVP now against Wake Forest. He's just been playing better. And the other guy that I think, the Bol Bowen, I mean, he was doing really nothing in the beginning of the year, and now he's giving you like really solid off the bench. And I didn't hear you mention Baba. All of a sudden, Baba Miller has turned into sort of like a rebounding, and he's picking up that slack too.
Yeah, I was kind of saving Baba because there was a comment that the coaches made where Baba was finally realizing that he needs to spend more time down in the post. And I'm just like, okay, the guy's been here 30 something games. You're the coach. Like, why are you surprised that he's not spending time in the post? Like, you tell him what to do. And so I don't know what's that dynamic is, and I don't want to speculate, but Baba is finally spending time down in the post. He's getting post touches, and that just leads to him having more success. And he seems to be like a lot of our players, when they have some success, they become, like they're future pros. And when they face a little adversity, they just crumble. And I think Baba seeing himself have a little success down on the post has sort of opened up the rest of his game, just given him more confidence. And he's been playing for sure much better. And I'm glad that you did mention him.
Yeah, 3 blocks against Wake Forest, 3 blocks against Notre Dame. That's 6 blocks in 2 games. During that losing stretch in December, he had one, two, three. He had f 6 blocks in the entire month of December. Okay, 6 blocks in the last 2 games for Baba. And it's funny, this was off camera, but we were walking back to the cars. No, I didn't give him a ride to whatever booster or whatever thing that was. We were walking back to the parking lot, and I asked him about blocking shots. He was like, that really wasn't a growing up in Europe and stuff. That just wasn't as I that was not a thing, a skill or a mindset that was taught to me. And I finally started, I think being here with Ganey, being here with Corin, like that was something that I knew I needed to add in order to play in the NBA. And now I'm starting to understand like the positioning you need to be in to block shots. So he's a transformed player for sure. But maybe your greater point, maybe your last point underscores all of it, which is that it's kind of been what we've said on the podcast for 1.5 years now, a little bit of a mentally soft team that when things were going well, they started playing better, and when things weren't, and that maybe has changed slightly. I mean, what was, I guess it was the Wake Forest game that they actually took the lead twice. We had a double digit lead twice, and Wake Forest came back and on multiple occasions tied or even took a 2 to 3 point lead. And I kind of get the sense that like the Matthew Cleveland, Caleb Mills roster, not trying to speak ill of people, but like if they lost a double digit lead, that was it. That was game. And on both times, Wake Forest took, I think it was a 3 point one time and a 4 point lead a different time, once in the first half, once in the second half. Both times there was an immediate stop, an immediate 6-0 or 7-0 run by Florida State to kind of regain that momentum and close things out. Jameer Watkins had a lot to do with both of them, but so did Baba Miller. And I'm not sure that happens last year or even earlier this year.
Yeah, on those like Trent Forrest, MJ Walker teams, if FSU had the if it was like a tie game with 5 minutes left, you're like, okay, this game's over. Like Florida State is going to win this game. And we haven't had that feeling much since then. And that's always been a little bit of Ham's calling card, is that his teams are just mentally and physically stronger than the other team, and they're able to function in those close games. And that's why he's won. He's got such a great record in close games over the years. But yeah, that went out the door with those players that you mentioned, those teams, that you mentioned. And it's good to see it coming back. It's a definitely a learned skill. So it's not like they just flipped the switch and now they can do that. But they're learning how to win games, which is half the battle of trying to coach these guys.
It definitely is. Maybe, I mean, I hate to say it. I just don't know. You look back at some of the game, you mentioned the Lipscomb game, and I watched that first 30 minutes and actually, I honestly didn't see a lot of the comeback. I think I forced myself to tune back in when they cut it down to like 4 or 5 points. But I hate to say it, like, do you miss out on an NCAA tournament bid? Because literally for a few weeks, like You just did nothing that the coaches were asking you to do. You gave no effort. You know, that you're back and forth there about Baba and the coach, and like, oh, he's finally realizing he's got to get down the paint zone. So, like, I can't imagine that a Hall of Fame basketball coach wasn't saying you got to go down to the paint. You know, like, I just, that's hard for me to believe. I know that, you know, hey, you're in a new circumstance. These, a lot of these guys in basketball, they've traveled thousands of miles from Taylor. Bol Bolin's from Northeast, right? Baba's from Spain. Other guys are from Corin's from the Midwest. Like, you're away from home, you're learning, you're bond, like, I understand that these are not grown men. These are not 27-year-olds that are professionals with a family and they're just used to being in the NBA. So I get it, but man, it's gonna feel tough to look back on a couple of those losses. The only other thing I'd be remiss to bring up too, because we've been talking about it on the comments a lot, if you're on the boards, the Tomahawk Nation boards, not the rebounding boards. The turnovers, man. I feel like this team, when this team that and that maybe when this team is dialed in on defense, they're forcing turnovers, which then seems to lead to better offense and better that effect, that E field goal percentage. You're getting better shots because you're forcing turnovers, you're playing at a higher pace. I don't know. I feel like even other teams start missing more threes in those games. Like, what has, you know, is it, do you think it's maybe a little bit of the defensive little tweak they made? Is it just Bol Bowen and Watkins finally like getting into the system and learning it? But the turnovers have been back the last 4 games in a row over 20%.
Yeah, it seems like what I've been seeing on the court is just the guys are the rotations are just like half step quicker. And but you know, so we're always going to, because of the size of our guys, we're always going to be in a position where small guards can penetrate. What how the other four guys rotate on those plays, you know, determines the success of them, because we can, you know, we can rotate a guy down and cut off the driver if we want to. But there's a lot of things that are happening with those other four guys who are not directly connected to the play, and they just seem to be rotating a little bit more crisp of late. And you know, that's just coaching, that's just learning the system, and the reason why we see teams get better from November to March, you know, are little things like that, like little tiny incremental improvements to how they're executing the system. And right now we're just seeing some pretty, you know, I wouldn't say call it great execution, but it's certainly better than it was against Lipscomb or, you know, against South Florida.
Yeah, that I think the Wake Forest is probably the best team that Florida State has beaten in this last this last stretch here when we in January when we're playing like an NCAA tournament team. And Steve Forbes after the game, who was a great interview, by the way. If y'all haven't seen the Steve Forbes interview, you can it's on the Wake Forest recap for folks looking to find it. It's also just on Matthew Minnick YouTube channel. I try to put all the coach interviews up there, but he said something that we used to hear team opposing coaches say a lot, which was, you know, they just simply we could not run the stuff we wanted to run. We weren't able to initiate the our guys just decided to start freelancing because by the time we got into a set, it was the clock was halfway done and we couldn't run anything. And our guys just took it off the bounce and hey, we made some good shots, we made a few runs. But we weren't playing any kind of Wake Forest basketball. And you look at it, I mean, Florida State created turnovers on 25% of Wake Forest possessions. 25%. When you're forcing a turnover on a quarter of the other team's possessions, that's usually going to end up pretty well from you. Wake also only they shot 36% from three, which for it sounds good, but for them, that was their lowest in the previous 8 or 9 games. So you know, and some of that's probably a little bit of luck. Some of that's also, though, we're defending better, right? Earlier in the possession. So the 3-point shot that they're taking is like off balance at the end, right?
Yeah, all those things add up, and by you know, Steve, Coach Forbes has pretty much nailed Ham's philosophy for years now. It's just, we're going to take away what you want to do, and your guys have to beat our guys one on one, and that's the philosophy of the defense. And right now, you know, we're doing a good enough job on defense and a good enough job on offense. I would, you know, we're not doing great on either side of the ball, but we're doing enough, you know, to beat like mid-level ACC teams, which, you know, we've got what, like 15 more games? You know, we're gonna have to do a whole lot more of beating that same, you know, caliber of team that we saw in like Virginia Tech and Wake Forest.
Yeah.
So
And you know what? That's a good segue. Let's go back to that question that we put a pin in that I know you've been getting on Twitter and it's all over the comment sections too. Like, so can FSU make the NCAA tournament? Of course, in the world of college basketball, which unlike college football, has a situation or a setup where you just have to win your conference tournament and you then have a guaranteed bid to the NCAA tournament. Yeah, the answer until you literally lose in the conference tournament, the answer is yes, Florida State can. And so maybe the better question is like, what needs to take place in order for Florida State to make the NCAA tournament? You mentioned beating mid-level ACC teams, sort of a blessing and a curse here. The ACC's got a whole lot of mid-level teams, right? The ACC, not going to be a ton of teams that you feel like, well, we have no chance of beating, right? We're not playing like at Kansas or anything like that. But also not a game, not a ton of games that you feel like, well, this will be a big feather in our cap. It's more just like we just have to stockpile a bunch of wins against other shitty teams or like semi-shitty teams that also have to somehow win 18 or 19 games. What would your answer be? Like, I mean, because you're the master of succinct. I'm probably a little more loquacious here, but can Florida take away the auto bid? Can Florida State get an at-large bid to the NCAA tournament?
Yes, the math is still there for us to get to, for us to be able to do that. I don't think it's going to happen, but it's there. This is not the ACC that's going to send a 6-10 team, you know, to the tournament like happened
Right,
years ago.
right.
I think the best comparison most recently is so Clemson last year. So Clemson finished 14-6, and they all waited on Selection Sunday and got disappointed and. They in their out of conference schedule, they had a couple of sketch. They had two, you know, pretty sketchy losses, which, you know, kind of line up with South Florida and Lipscomb. They had one, you know, decent win, you know, over Penn State. We have one, you know, pretty solid win over Colorado. And then they won 14 games in conference, and they got left out. And so I think that, you know, obviously there's you know, a new year brings about new everything, but if we get to 14 wins, we are definitely on the wrong side of the bubble heading into the ACC tournament. So we're either gonna need 15 wins and a couple of you know, one or two wins in the ACC tournament, or we're gonna need to win the ACC tournament. And I don't know which is more unlikely at this point. You know, like getting to 15-5, or you know, winning, what would it take, three consecutive games in the ACC tournament?
Yeah. Well, we
But
just
yeah,
proved
so
we can win four consecutive games in the ACC. So that's
we
nice.
did, yeah, for the first time in a while.
We did like whenever I'm filling my bracket, this is every year I ask myself, has this team won six consecutive games against major conference opponents? Because if they haven't, they're not going to suddenly do it in March. Right? We're talking about to win the national championship, right? So in this version of it, to win the ACC tournament championship, can this team win four straight games against conference opponents? If they haven't done it during the year, they're not going to suddenly do it in March. So at least we've done that. What was Clemson's? You said they were 14-6. Do you have it pulled up? What was their best win away from home, neutral or road, last year?
In out of conference play, they beat nobody away from home. In conference play, they beat Pitt or NC State, which are
Yeah.
neither of those were good teams.
I seem to recall them doing a lot of their damage at home.
Yeah, I
I
mean
th
Pitt was like the last team into the NCAA tournament, and that was
yeah, it
the
was
best
basically
team they
like
beat.
we're gonna give y'all either Pitt or Clemson, whichever one you want. And you know, like that's your I'll say that we have noticed that from the committee over the years. I'm not gonna say they don't care about home wins, but Florida State had a season where they beat Duke at home and Florida at home. And Florida won the national title that year, and they didn't make the NCAA tournament. But when you start to go outside of your home and win game, because the NCAA tournament is played not at your home court, right? So the committee has said that time and time again. The NCAA tournament is not played on your home court. You need to win away from home. I will say that, and FSU fans need to, I don't know what kind of like weird vibe with Dion, like, I don't know. Dion was doing his job to me. Dion took a recruit because he's doing his job. FSU need fans, if you want your team to make the NCAA tournament, need to swallow their ego and pride and root like hell that Colorado like wins 10 straight games. Because that is your win. That is like, okay, you went away from home and you beat what could be an NCAA, like a mid-seed NCAA tournament team. And you probably got to find another way to win some sort of like at Miami game, right?
Which is what, yeah, because there's two teams in KenPom's top 30 in the ACC, Duke and North Carolina. Yeah. We played neither of them. We already played North Carolina. We don't have any more opportunities to beat either of those two on the road, which leaves Miami and Clemson. That's it.
Clemson is tanking hard and fast.
Yep. Yeah. And so we've got we've got chances to pick up the exact same wins that Clemson had last year. They beat Pitt and NC State on the road. We can beat Miami and Clemson on the road. It's the exact same thing. You win an extra game in conference, maybe that's enough to get us in.
15-5. You hope that Colorado finishes top three in the Pac-12. Maybe UNLV. I'll say this. The Mountain West looks pretty good. Maybe UNLV picks up some more quality wins to give that win a little bit of luster there. But yeah, the math to your point. It's just because here's the problem. Here's the other problem with 14-6. And actually, it really starts at 13-7. But even at 14-6 is a little bit. If you're looking at the rest of the way and you start saying, okay, well, 14-6. So we're going to go 14-6. I got to find five more losses. All right. Well, when you start to add it up, you're like, okay, so let's say Duke lost at home and maybe at Clemson, you know, not a terrible loss, like in and of itself. And maybe at Syracuse or something, or actually that is a pretty bad loss. At Miami, not a terrible loss in and of itself. Maybe at Virginia Tech, not a terrible loss in and of itself. UNC at home. Well, all right. After that, any more losses are to Louisville, are to home to BC, are to, you know, like they're not, they're bad losses. And if you say, well, we'll just lose the Duke and the UNC game, that'll be two of our five more. Well, then you didn't beat anybody, right? Then you didn't beat anybody.
Yeah. Yeah, they might give us a couple bad losses in 23, but they're not going to give us bad losses in 24. Like if you're trying to be an 11 seed or 12 seed, and you're saying you can at least say, hey, we got better over the course of the year, but if we pick up some bad losses in like February or if we lose to Georgia Tech in March or something, then it's done.
What you can also say is we got Jalen Gainey back from injury. We got Primo Spear. Like, we're a different team. That sounds familiar, right? We're a different team now than we were back then. But to your point, you can't lose to Louisville. I'm not even sure you can lose at home to UVA. UVA, I don't know what – UVA is getting blitzed by everybody. So I'm not even sure you can lose that game at home. And here's the other problem. For years and years, Florida State didn't game the RPI like they should have. And I railed it. I wrote an entire series about it. And then we finally started learning how to game the RPI. And the NCAA went from something called the RPI to the net. And the net fixes some of the flaws of the RPI. The net does, I will say, fix some of the things that the RPI was easily manipulated. But it has its own flaws. And here is the way to manipulate the net. This is the new net ranking that the committee likes to use to quote when they're justifying what team they've just magically decided is good enough to be a 12 seed and the other team isn't good enough, right? The net can be manipulated by playing horrible teams and winning by 30 or 40. The single best game probably besides beating a team that's actually like got 25 wins, which is always going to be every single system out there. You're going to get credit for beating a team that has 25, 30 wins. The Kennesaw State win was great for Florida State because we beat the shit out of them. And so the net looks at your efficiency margins. And so that sees a game where you were, you know, 30 points better in a 75 possession game. So you're just crushing the efficiency margins. And you look around and Florida State is 3-0 and quad four games. Okay, well, at least we don't have any truly horrendous losses. That's nice. We don't have like a quad four loss. 3-0, that seems a little light. Let me read you. Florida State, by the way, is 98th in net. We're 10-6 overall. We're 98th in the net. The NCAA tournament is 68 teams. The math on 98 making it in a 68 team tournament ain't gonna work. Let me read to you some. These are some quad four records of teams that are in all in the top 30, Michael, all in the top 30. 9-0 against just quad four. That's not their overall record. Just quad four. 9-0. 8-0 against just quad four. 8-0 again against just quad four. 7-0. All those are top 30 teams. So that this system that the NCAA uses, they are all in the top 30 of the system, and more than half of their schedules, and in the case of the 9-0, more than two-thirds of their schedules are played against the worst teams in college basketball. Now, what do you think those 8-0, 9-0, and a couple of 7-0? It was 2 8-0s, 1 9-0, and a 7-0. What do they all have in common? Just curious.
That's a good question. I know that Kansas has gone from a team that's played everybody to a team that plays nobody. So I'm gonna go step out on a limb here and guess that those are Big 12 teams you're naming.
So they are Big 12 teams. Kansas, by the way, is only 4-0. They are 3-0 against quad three. So they're 7-0 against the bottom two quads. But that first team, the 8-0 team, well, BYU is fifth. Fifth in the net. They're 8-0 against quad four. Iowa State is ninth in the net. They're 9-0 against quad four, right? The next team's Oklahoma. They're 23rd, 8-0 against quad four. And TCU is 29th, 7-0 against quad four.
Yeah, Iowa State's played, I think, six games against KenPom top 300 or worse teams.
Yeah.
You know, they beat Grambling State 92-37, and that
And the
is
net loves
probably
that.
did as much for their net as beating Houston at home.
It 100% did. It 100% did. And so now when the Big 12 plays all these games in conference play, Michael, well, you're gonna get quad one. Look at this. We got a quad one win over Iowa State. We got a quad one win over Oklahoma. BYU's in the top five. You could beat them at home and it's a quad one win. It doesn't even have to be like on the road. You can just get a home win over BYU.
Well, the ACC is such a well-run basketball powerhouse conference. I'm sure they're teaching all the teams to how to game the
Yeah,
net.
I'm sure. I mean, actually, Miami has played eight, so kudos to them. They're 7-1. They lost one of them. But
That's rough.
Pitt's played six. Syracuse has played three, like us.
It's not just us.
No, it's not just at all.
That's
It
good.
sounds to me like the brilliant ACC commissioner doesn't understand net and hasn't figured it out. I mean, it's very clear that the Big 12 did this with a purpose, right? It is very clear that the Big 12, Texas Tech's 37th in the net. They're 9-0. 9-0 against quad four. Okay? So this is not the Big 12, every single team in the Big 12 doing this. Miami, it looks like they did it and they lost one of them. Can't do that.
Yeah, I think of Miami, they had the opportunity to both pick up an ACC win and a quad four win, and they failed because they lost at home to Louisville, which is
Yeah.
just
Oh,
one of
so they didn't schedule. That's right. You know
the
what? That's right. I need to go back out and look at some of these quad four wins are just not even ones that were scheduled by. They're just people who played Louisville. Great. Good for them. Okay. So ran aside, can we make the NCAA tournament? Florida State needs to get that net into the 50s, which means they need to start beating teams by more than 10. I'm just gonna be honest. You need to start beating teams by more than 10, and you got to win 10 more ACC games, and then probably one or two in the ACC tournament. If that's the answer for people want. And you need to beat UNC or Duke at home. You got to beat somebody. So 10 more ACC wins out of the next 15. Beat either UNC or Duke at home. Personally, I think we bat match up better against Duke. And you need to go out and pound Louisville. You need to beat, when you play Virginia at home, you got to beat them by 20. And you have to probably go 1-1 in the next two games. If we're just being honest, like if you're saying, well, okay, we have 15 left and you got to get 10 of them, you probably have to go 1-1 in the next two games. The next two games are at Miami, who plays like six players, and Clemson at home. So, you know, if you lose at Miami, you can't go then lose to Clemson at home. So because home losses are punished in the net. Literally counts as 1.5 losses, 1.4 loss when they add up the record. So can't lose at home.
For the folks who like Sunshine and Roses, the first podcast of the season, I think you and I both said there is 0% chance that this team makes the tournament, and now there's a chance. So hey, things are looking up.
So can we beat Miami on the road? Did it last year?
We can. I mean, they lost to Louisville at home. They lost to Colorado by 30. They're certainly beatable. They have more talent than Florida State. You know, they've leaned all in on NIL and have brought in some, you know, big transfers like, you know, Nigel Pack they're Ormier, the big dude in the middle, and Matthew Cleveland. But then they've really stunk it up. So who knows? They're one of the big disappointments of the season. They started the year 13th, you know, ranked 13th, and now they're, you know, barely even receiving votes. So we'll see.
They turned over 17.5% of their possessions. Florida State, you'd imagine, has to have that over 20 to have any chance, right, on the road?
I would think. And, you know, the Miami has zero depth. One of the things that's really going to dictate how this game is played is how the refs call the game. You know, if they're calling a tight game and Miami's having a hard time defending because they can't get in foul trouble, you know, then I'd like our chances. Matthew Cleveland, who, you know, everybody's familiar with from his time at Florida State, has quietly put together a very good, you know, junior season at Miami. He's made 46% of his threes. He still doesn't take very many, but he's making them. All of his stats are up, and it's just, you know, he's now the third or fourth option, which is a perfect role for him.
Yeah, he's catch and shoot in the corner after Pack and Poplar have, you know, broken the D down, right?
Right, but he's also, you know, part of a team that's underperforming, which sounds familiar. So I don't want to badmouth the kid. It's just you got to, if this becomes a trend, you know, everywhere he plays, then I think it's pretty obvious. But I'm sure he'll be fired up to play Florida State. He knows all our players. Our players know him. So that'll be a kind of a fun, you know, matchup to watch.
Yeah, he still turns the ball over a lot. So if we're talking about turning Miami over, you know, maybe you throw a couple of well-timed pressure or traps in the backcourt with him. It's a shame we didn't, you know, a couple games ago, I think Wuga Poplar was out and Miami seemed to struggle a little bit with him out. He's back, or at least he played in the Virginia Tech game. So I didn't hear that he had a setback or anything. He makes Miami a lot better. Wuga Poplar is a guy that quite honestly started to come alive during last year's NCAA tournament run. 6'5", you know, big athletic guard, 49% from three, Michael, on 75 shots, right? 37 for 75 from three and 88% from the free throw line. So, you know, Florida State does have a tendency to foul. So he's a guy that could really give us problems. And I was hoping that his ankle injury would have lasted. Not hoping for guys to get hurt. He was already out. I didn't hope for that. Would have been nice if maybe it took him a little week or so to get more rehab. Seems like he could be a difference maker for them. But let's switch over to the Clemson game. Or I don't know. Is there anything else you'd want to say about Miami? Or
no, but Poplar's definitely. If anybody from that team has a good pro career, it's going to be Poplar.
He's a pro.
He's a hell of a player.
Yeah, no, he's legit. I think he's honestly, maybe, you know, everyone talked about like Lonnie. Who's their big five star from a few years
back? Lonnie Walker.
And he did. He was a first round draft. I think he's still in the NBA and he's bouncing around. He's a rotation player. I actually think Wuga's like everything that they wanted Lonnie to be, man. He just makes shots off the bounce. He gets to the line. He's a strong defender. Like he's a good player. Clemson comes to Tallahassee on Saturday and they did what Clemson does, which is win a lot of games in the non-conference part of the year. And now they've got into ACC play. They've lost three of their last four. They lost at Miami, which is understandable, but they did lose by 13. They dropped a home game to UNC where they kind of no-showed, and UNC kind of just punked them, to be honest. Baycott was too much for them. And then they went and lost by 15 at Virginia Tech before they came home and got a badly needed win over Boston College. The trend here is that they have four losses on the season. They're 12-4. Three of the four have been away from home. And then the one home game was to a very good, probably Final Four possible UNC team. So they struggle on the road, and they'd be coming into the Tucker Center that I'm not going to say has necessarily been full, but, you know, maybe Clemson brings out some of the casual fans because they just want to root against Clemson.
Yeah, they're a weird team. They in conference only offense, they're the number one team in the conference, and in conference only defense, they're the worst team in the conference. So defense travels. Hopefully their defense travels to you know, when it comes to the Tuck. It's a weird team for Coach Brownell, in that they're just really good offensively and really bad defensively. I'm not quite sure what to make of that. Why they're so good on offense. They've got PJ Hall, who's, you know, a big dude in the middle who's always going to give FSU problems. They've got some transfers. They brought in Gerard from Syracuse. They've got some talented guys, but they're probably, you know, not much better off than Florida State. You know, their best win out of conference was Alabama, which is a pretty good win, you know, but then they've kind of got smoked a few times in ACC play. So they're, you know, ahead of Florida State when it comes to the NCAA tournament, but they're going to be coming to Tallahassee knowing that they don't have to win the game, but it's a big, big, big mark on their resume if they're not able to beat Florida State on the road.
Well, they're sort of the opposite of Florida State, right? Florida State struggled out of conference, and now it's 4-1 in conference. Clemson really took care of business with the exception of that road game against Memphis out of conference, and now they're struggling in conference. I will say that their net rank is 27th now, and that's largely due to playing to winning games by a healthy margin in the out of conference. Just by the way, 3-0 quad four, so only three, right? Versus the Big 12, they're 3-0. And I checked a couple others just while we're on it. UNC, they're 4-0. Duke, 5-0. So no one in the ACC has played anywhere close to the nine that the teams in the Big 12 have played. Joe Girard, you mentioned him. Interesting. Last year, which I tend to want to just completely discount because it was a 9-win team for Florida State that just totally quit. Last year, he was actually the game MVP on KenPom when they came down to Florida State and won, when he was at Syracuse, and he was 5 of 8 from three. You go back and look at some other years, though, and he's 6'2", and I think sometimes our length can bother him. He was 4 for 11 against us in a game in 2022, and actually 1 for 4 in a loss. We played them a couple times. I don't think we played in a COVID year, and then he was 5 for 12 against us from three back in 2020. You know, maybe there's a route there to where you bother Girard with some length. Maybe PJ Hall gets in some foul trouble, and we've seen Clemson struggle on the road. I think it's too easy of a question to say, well, what would you, if we went 1-1, what would your prediction be? Mm-hmm. I think that's too easy of a question, but do you think it's higher chances that we beat Miami or that we beat Clemson by 10 or more? Because like I said, if we want to start having serious NCAA tournament conversations, you got to start winning games by the margins that are going to move the net needle. So what do you think, Michael? A better chance that we win at Miami by any amount or that we beat Clemson by 10 plus?
Well, right now, you know, we've won 4 in a row, so I'm just like, I'm all in until it's one of those things. You win and everything's great, you lose and, you know, everything's terrible. And I'm just going to assume that everything keeps going well, so we're going to beat Miami. I don't know that we can beat Clemson by 10. I just don't. I struggle to see a Brownell defense being that bad that Florida State is able to kind of run away with things on offense. But, you know, if you look at the data, it's been that bad. So,
yeah,
it shouldn't surprise anybody, but it would surprise me, even though it shouldn't.
I think I might. This is good. This is good podcast content, Michael. I think I'm going to disagree. Now, let me say this. I'm not saying I'm predicting a loss against Miami. Yeah, I think we can go down there and get the win. A worse team beat a better Miami team last year. I think 100% we can go down there, frustrate Cleveland into a few turnovers, get them maybe into a track meet that doesn't go well for them in the second half as their depth starts to be a concern. I think we can win that game. But the question of better odds of beating Miami or beating Clemson by 10, I look at this, Michael, and I see away from home, that's a 13-point loss to Miami and then a 15-point loss to a Virginia Tech team that Florida State just beat. And would I go down and put my poker chip on FSU beating Clemson by 10? I don't think so. But I think you can get ahead 75 to 60, you know, with a few minutes to go, and maybe they make a little run, but, you know, we hit some free throws and you win an 82-72 kind of game. So I'm gonna take the opposite of you.
Yeah. They are beat up, which works in your favor. Yeah. You know, they're down a couple guys. So we'll see.
I think officially put me down for we go 1-1 over the next two with a 10-point win over Clemson. But I'm like 45-55 on us beating Miami. Like, I don't know. I don't have to be – you could maybe talk me into saying we beat them both.
Well, we'll ask Perry to note that in the show notes that Matt has said that we're going to beat Clemson by 10 or more.
Yeah, yeah. Put it down right now. Take none of this as betting advice. I just want to put that disclaimer out there. Take note of this as betting because we said that we were left for dead at the end of December, and now we've run off four straight. It's been good talking to you as always. My hope is that the team does continue to play at a level that makes us want to hop on a pod a little more, gives us a feeling that fans want to hear a podcast maybe a little bit more.
Right. As long as they try and win a few games, then basketball can be fun. So let's have some fun. That's all.
I think that's your new slogan. Just try and win a few games. that's where we're at with FSU basketball right now. Just try and win a few games. Yeah. All right. This has been a good gospel of ham. Hopefully y'all enjoyed it. Hopefully people come out to the Clemson game. I'm telling you, you want to make the tournament. Those are the games to do it. You cannot lose at home to Clemson if you're trying to go 15-5. So come on out to the Tucker Center on Saturday. And if you're not anywhere near enough in Tallahassee, at least, you know, rage on your Twitter or something like that as you follow along. For Michael, I'm Matt. We will talk again soon.